When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, what is your favorite Amsterdamian treat?
Well, first off, mate, what are you doing calling me on a Tuesday when you know we film and record the UBP on a Friday? What is going on?
I knocked at your door in Wales. You weren't there. I came back up north and rang you anyway to get you on the call because you're off for the rest of this week. So we have to pre-record an entitled banter pod. But thankfully, because everybody is an incredible set of legends, we have tons of questions and talking points and things anyway.
Indeed. So
this is the Entitled Banter podcast. I'm Scott Tilford. You're Jules Gill.
Indeed, I am. And welcome to the UBP.
The UBP. Well, yes, we get through as many questions, talking points around the gaming industry or whatever else people have on their minds as possible. However, I do want to ask you, what is your favorite Amsterdamian treat?
Favorite? That is such a loaded question because you know that I'm going to say it is the big doobs, my friend.
It might
friend.
Not be the old disco biscuits. I'm partial to a stroop waffle. I'm just saying.
To be fair, I used to love them, but I don't think I can have them because they got milk or egg or both in. Somewhere along the line, a chicken was wiped across that stroop waffle and therefore it was rendered completely unassailable by my silly vegan mouth.
They need to do some vegan stroop waffles, to be fair.
I don't know why they can't do it. Literally, it's like they're saying that we're in the lab, guys. We're building burgers out of meat proteins or fake meat proteins.
We're inventing
meats. Science. It's a 3D printed steak, and then you can't tell me that you can't put a bit of caramel onto some biscuit.
Yeah.
Come on, mate.
I had one from a shout out to Rudy from Amsterdam, who's some dude who's had the same recipe for like 45 or 55 years. It's I Googled best stroop waffles in Amsterdam.
Nice.
And went to this old dude called Rudy, and he was serving out of a little market stall. Beautiful, beautiful stroop waffles.
I thought you were going to say beautiful. He was beautiful.
He was a beautiful man. But still, the stroop waffles were very nice.
I would say that my favorite thing to have there when I was over there for a stag do, so obviously it was a multitude of alcohol.
You were huffing the puff.
Yeah, there was a lot of things going on in Amsterdam. But Chief Leaf is a great name, by the way.
That's not mine. That's Andy Murray, but it's Chief Leaf's in the building.
That is fantastic. For me, it was actually the coffee. It was exceptionally good. I just remember I needed it more than I've ever needed any sort of drink in my life because I remember the day after, as it were, it was like the Hangover Part 4 where I was just sitting there shaking, physically unable to hold on to like spoons and forks. And yet it was this beautiful, deep coffee mug filled with glorious black liquid that I just sucked on. And I was like, I start to feel human again. Unfortunately, it did wear off when I got onto the flight home.
Right.
I started actually shaking so badly that there was a woman coming past, a flight attendant, and she was like, here's a complimentary beer, Heineken, because you've left that. I was like, thank you. She looked at me. She gave me a second one without asking it. Literally, she was like, you need this effectively. So I was like thank you. Thank you very much.
The whole Chief Leaf side of Amsterdam, I dabbled in the old edibles, but they did very little for me. So I need to go back.
Hardcore, mate. That's why.
I need to reapproach and try a different approach. But the dude that was selling me stuff was like, you're big, you're thick, you'll be fine. And he's like, just take the whole brownie. I was like, okay, sure, I'll try this thing.
They're like quaffing the entire tray.
It's like, is it working yet? But anyway, yeah, so we'll get through as many questions and stuff as we can. First question from Andy Taylor, who says, hey guys, hope you're both well. The best podcast on Spotify.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
A very important question, tea or coffee? Also, where are the mugs? We have no idea. We don't know.
The thing is that we've been quite busy with recent What Culture projects, which have like caused me to travel up and down the country, and will do so for the next couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But as soon as that is over, I will be hammering down the door of Mr. Adam Cleary and saying, where are the mugs? And I'll tell you what, have this as a guarantee that you can take to the bank. If What Culture Gaming has not provided you guys with mugs by the 1st of September, because that is roughly when I'm back, technically it's the 3rd, I will be putting up the design onto Teespring myself, and I will and be damned with the consequences. You will get your mugs by
year's
end.
We will make
end.
The mugs. Yes, we are determined to make the mugs. We've told the relevant parties. They've not got back to us.
Live and Let's Dice, right? Because of the fact that I'm allowed to do whatever I want with that now, mm-hmm. I basically can just put it up as a Live and Let's Dice design and sell it that way and give you a
could.
Cut.
You
probably get a bigger cut of the mugs than if we went through this way, mate. This is business 101.
I forget when we first sent this design off to be a potential turnaround. I think it was last year. It's been a while.
I remember we asked Rich to, Hudson for the design. He was like, yep, he fished it all out. I think he had to redraw some bits of it as well because of the fact that it was like so long ago that it was like a cave painting.
That was the initial artwork. And then I faffed with I made it like a long one that you could wrap around the mug. And then that's
the big long E that went around the mug. Yeah,
the mug
that.
Makers. And then they never got back to us. But someday we'll do it. Tea or coffee, though, I'm going to assume you're a cough man.
Oh, it's 100% coffee, mate. It's just, it used to be tea. I used to like drink tea religiously and wouldn't touch coffee at all. Mm-hmm. But then as time has gone on and I've gotten older and bolder.
And more in need of a pick-me-up.
Oh, unbelievably so. There was that, what was it called again? The place that was up in Newcastle? Fresh Brews? Good Brews?
Good Brews. Shout out to Good Brews.
They actually serve good brews there, and the coffee that the guy made me, it was like a rocket up my backside, mate. It was like literally, I was just like, for the rest of the day, I was just like,
we kind of needed stuff like, you always need something like that. I always feel like you get up and you're struggling to wake up, and my actual morning doesn't really kick in till I get a coffee, which I get is the most cliched thing. But I had that when I was in Amsterdam. I was just like, I'm barely awake until I get a coffee or something, and then it's like you feel like you blink different after you've had it. It's like, oh, okay,
yeah, because you're blinking like a hummingbird's heartbeat, mate. You're just going like fluttering away. Like if you had fake eyelashes on, you'd do like that tornado gust attack from a little waft, mate. Thing is that like coffee is fantastic, but it is so bad for you. Like we were just describing how it's the only way to wake up. That shouldn't be the case.
No.
We should be allowed to just wake up normally, but it's just, we burn the candle at both ends. Mm-hmm. We work quite hard. And I think it's to do with the fact that we work a lot with computers. We're quite sedentary. Mm-hmm. So it means that our brains maybe get a bit bored or fatigued a bit quicker. So by having the coffee, you're just kind of like stimulating, trying to stay awake.
I've definitely like gotten more into the brewing side of it, like having got all the equipment for it and like my like the French press / cafetiere and the AeroPress and whatever. There's all these different things where it's sort of like you start the process and then it's like, okay, wait like 4 minutes or 2 minutes or whatever, depending on the process, whilst like the granules soak and things like that. Or maybe you're grinding beans. So there's like that part of it too. I like all that stuff. Like it feels like crafting or it feels like cooking or whatever. So I've kind of gotten more into that stuff and then enjoying that side of it as much as actually like drinking it. But I totally agree with you that the more you're dependent on it, like being aware of that is like kind of scary to some degree, where it's like I can't really wake up until I've had one of these drinks. But I do.
There's a friend in our group, I won't name names, but they take it a bit too far with coffee, to the point where it's like they're telling you all about it and it might as well have like a TED Talk banner by the side of it. It's like, it's like, yes, fantastic. I'm so glad that you spent £70 importing this like bag from like the foothills of Colombia.
You're describing me.
No, but it's not you though, because it's like this person, it like delivers this information in a very like holier than thou way, like, oh, you drink anything less than this finest bean that was kissed by Jesus himself. I'm just like, no, I'm fine. So like, you know, as much as I love a good coffee, I will take an instant Kenko if it's nothing else going. So I'll drink whatever I drink, you know.
Yeah, I'll also say that like having gotten lost in the world of coffee brewing and watching, you know, there are a million YouTube videos where one person's just called it the one secret to brewing that changed everything. And all it is like
leave it for an extra minute.
Yeah, an extra minute. Maybe you turn the cup upside down. Maybe you tap the side of the jar and it moves some of the granules. Like, at the end of the day, it's a cup of coffee. Like, there's only so many ways you can do it. I get that that's blasphemous to that community. But at the same time, I just want my drink at some point, not a half an hour thing.
Thing is, as well, like, no disrespect to the therapeutic. Yes. There's a joke in there somewhere.
That's
like, to those people out there who really get a kick out of it, big up you. But if you're one of those hipsters who says that you can't drink coffee any other way, get another hobby, mate. Seriously, there is more to life than that. Because I tell you what, when the walls start falling, when the revolution sounds, where are you going to be? Oh, you're going to be standing by your cafetiere, your little French press, pushing that down. Give me 5 minutes. No, sir. You take those instant sachets that you get in the travel lodge, and you run for it. You run for the hills.
You put as many in your pocket as you can, and you hide out for as long as you can. But yeah, we're both definitely coffee boys in regards to that versus tea. Next question from Mark O'Brien. Which character from Lord of the Rings, Mortal Kombat, or AEW, thanks to the WB Discovery deal, do you want to see in multiverses?
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's a great... Do you know what? Multiverses has just turned into like meme the game, hasn't
just
it?
Just everything the game, yeah.
Like, and while I think that it's absolutely incredible that the developer is able to kick out these things with enough speed that it feels fairly relevant... Mm-hmm. I feel like in about a year or two's time, we're going to look back at this game and it's going to have aged the worst because it's so the time that it's now behind the times. Like,
I wonder how much they're going to like front load the amount of guest stuff.
Yeah, the people are like, oh, they put in like the Looney Tunes meme. Oh, they've made this person say that. It's like, oh, it's dead then. As soon as it's dead, it's like we're done with it. Like, whenever the teacher notices you or like you've done something and then they get in on the joke, it's like your parents getting in on the joke. They've ruined it the moment that they accept that it's there.
Yeah, it's like burning every single one of them. You can burn it once. It's like, okay, burn this card, burn this card.
Yeah.
I would like them to flesh it out and do like AEW stuff. That would be fun. I mean, they've done LeBron James, like obviously basketballer. So it's like you could do, I mean, I would take like Hangman Page or like Kenny Omega, guys.
My question to you is, are they big enough to deserve
CM Punk is, I think.
Like, but this thing, CM Punk maybe, but you have to remember, it was like I was watching something the other day. It's like outside of John Cena, The Rock, and possibly Batista, there is a huge swathe of the world that has no idea who half of these wrestling people are. You could show them a picture of like CM Punk, and maybe people would get a response from them because obviously he broke out a little bit into UFC. But outside of that, there's very few people that would know it. Like, you show them like somebody like Sammy Guevara or something like that, they'd be like, who the heck is this? But like, what is going on here?
What's a Luchasaurus?
Yeah,
I think Luchasaurus would fit as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
The thing is, like, I think someone like Punk, I think, is big enough because a lot of people, I feel like the general reaction when he went to AEW was so huge. And now, like, that permeated even my Twitter, and I wasn't that bothered about wrestling. That's why I ended up giving it a shot. And so I would take, like, someone like a Kenny Omega or a CM Punk's probably their biggest get, I think. Mm-hmm. But in terms of Mortal Kombat, I mean, obviously the go-to is Scorpion, but I would want him to be the animated Scorpion, the super angular one from the last couple of animations. Rings, I don't know if they just do like an Aragorn or something, or maybe they get a character from the new show, the Rings of Power thing. I think Galadriel's in there, but
what they should do is they should put Frodo in there, but make him like absolutely useless, so that he's just kind of like the
just summon Sam in.
Like, you know, all he does is this is like Ace, what's his name, Ace Attorney Phoenix Wright. Because when you're playing as him in the Marvel versus Capcom games, he does very little of the attacking, but you get to summon other people to like help you out, or like throws things at people. So that could be quite good if he's like the Fellowship rides across the screen or something, or like Boromir just like sounds the horn that stuns people.
Someone grabs him like from behind and then does the attack and puts him back again or something.
Or maybe the whole character is the entire Fellowship and it changes depending on which one you've used through the ring like morphing.
I like that in Smash Brothers, the way they did Dragon Quest, where it's like every single protagonist is one person, but you can like summon them all in. I think in their finisher, they all come in together.
What's so funny about that is that like Dragon's Quest, perfect example of how to take multiple protagonists and put them into one character. Fire Emblem, on the other hand, ye gods, man.
They're on like 12.
The amount of Fire Emblem characters that are in there, that, no offense, for the most part look the same. For the most part, I have no idea what the difference is. And there's like, even fans of the series are like, huh, Like, I guess, yeah, cool.
I mean,
I
love Fire Emblem, but I'm not like, and I made a point like a few months back of going through every single Fire Emblem fighter to see if there was much crossover. And they were all quite different. There was a couple of moves crossed over. And I guess in terms of like the moves that slot into different parts of their specials, that stuff crosses over. Okay, that's a ranged attack. That's a splash damage attack or whatever. But overall, like you said, there's way too many. There's like 12 mm-hmm. or 14 mm-hmm. or something. It's like there's way more slots you could fill. Who's your ultimate character from Lord of the Rings, Mortal Kombat or AEW?
My ultimate character, I would love to see if they could put in Strider or Aragorn, would be great. Although it would be amazing to play as a Ringwraith as well. That could be quite fun to have like a bad guy going up against them. Or alternate take, what if they allowed you to play as Sauron, but from...
The Elvish version.
Yeah. Well, like you see him in the first bit of the Fellowship where he's just absolutely batting people out of the cages.
Okay. Oh, that would be like the iconic, yeah, like the full armor version. Like
that would
like
be cool.
What do they call that place? That I forget where Mount Doom, that sort of general area that mm-hmm. he's from. I would take CM Punk would be cool. I'm more of a Hangman fan in terms of those two. I would take Hangman Page in terms of a wrestler thing. Next question from Jin Kazama, who says, where do you see God of War going after Ragnarok? Because they've said, it's not part of the question sent in, but Ragnarok is the final one in this particular story. Like they said, they were initially going to do a trilogy, and this is a good few months or maybe a year ago, that Ragnarok is apparently the last one. So I don't know if that's what that's going to do in terms of Kratos goes somewhere else. Maybe Kratos dies, maybe we move on to playing as Atreus, but it seems like Ragnarok is the last one.
I mean, yeah, I don't know, because it's so hard to predict where Ragnarok is going to go. Like, you think that there's going to be a story beat of maybe Atreus, like, becoming Loki and then taking over or like, having a battle against his dad. Like, there might be a horrible conflict there where the father has to choose whether or not to sacrifice himself to let his son live. Mm-hmm. There probably will be elements of that, I reckon, that they'll touch on. Mm-hmm. But his hero's journey, for me, is reaching its natural conclusion in the sense of, he's done all he needs to do. He's slain all of the bosses. He's slain all of the gods. So it maybe is time to let him rest finally. And then maybe relook at going back through the original God of War games and recontextualizing them with remakes that are given the same sort of love and care as this reboot was, effectively.
I feel like it needs like purpose. Like the original series was so over the top and gore happy and ridiculous. Yeah. It was just, what if a dude had so much power and was angry enough to rip the gods apart? And that was fun. It was a nice enough purpose that kind of worked for the trilogy, but everything that, like Ascension that came after was a bit naff. And it was just like, it just died for a while. And I feel like it came back because it had purpose again. Like Corey Barlog wrote that story because he was becoming a dad himself. And it was like, he could bring across a lot of the those stories and those relationships and everything. And so Ragnarok feels like, because it's a different director this time, but I don't know, Corey Barlog is still part of the team, and so I kind of wonder, like, depends what story they're telling, but I don't want more here's Kratos doing stuff like games. Like they feel like they have to have purpose, especially because he's matured it so much now. I don't even know, like, where do you sit on the idea of like Atreus being the face of this franchise going forward? Like, I like Atreus a lot, but I don't know if I want God of War light, let's say.
It could work. It all depends on how they get rid of Kratos, because if, like you say, if we go down the route of Loki ushers in Ragnarok, and therefore there will be he would be seen as the antagonist of this story, and then the father has to stop him. If there's a redemption arc at the end, Kratos dies, but places it and says, "Here's the passing of the torch, guys listening at home, like gamers. He's going to be the new guy going forward."
Yeah.
Maybe it could work. If it ends with a sort of like, ho-hum, that's the end of our adventure. I love my dad and I will miss him loads. And then it goes straight into his story, like the Jack Marston story. Then it might not feel earned. And
I feel like the weird thing for them too, sorry, is like the whole thing with, you know, what do you do? What is his purpose after that? Like, it's like, the whole point of the 2018 one was, you know, he's better than Kratos. So like Kratos says, you need to be better. And it's like, if you're teaching lessons about violence in video games and like the agency of just ripping everything in half, then you need something more mature overall. And I think that ages out of the IP overall anyway.
Well, this is the thing. It goes back to just what I was saying about the Jack Marston thing. Mm. Like when in that his story of Red Dead Redemption, his dad is obviously teaching him, like, you know, you hit the books, you become a better person than I ever could be, because I'm going to be stuck in this cycle of violence forever. But as soon as he takes up the gun and seeks revenge against his father's killer, he enters into the cycle of violence, and everything that was learned up until that point is nothing. He's literally just a repetitive cycle of his dad. Mm-hmm. Now, if you say Atreus follows the same path, if they don't write it correctly, then we'll end up with, like you say, God of War light that will pale in comparison, because it will be emulating what we've seen before. And
ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Nothing worse than a game that tries to copy itself, because if you're cribbing from your own notes, then it's not, you're never developing the character much.
Totally. I mean, I like the PSP games, but obviously they were in between the trilogy, I think maybe there was one after God of War 3, but yeah, God of War Ascension was like so drawn out. Like, hey, by the way, this story also happened.
Yeah.
And it was like, we know what's going to happen. He's going to get annoyed and tear things in half and that's it. But yeah, I kind of want God of War to be shelled, like to be done, like to feel like a sense of finality if it's written that way, and not to repeat the same mistakes of the past and elongating it too much. As long as it has purpose, I'll keep going after it. I just think if you do an Atreus fronted game, maybe it just turns into like a Horizon, because he's a very bow and arrow character anyway. He does have some daggers and stuff, but like, yeah, I don't want the homogenous Sony approach to get too close, where they make one game and then that's the
style of thing, isn't it? Like, we get one good idea but spread it across 40 games.
Yeah, and that increasingly feels like the Sony first party approach, is that there's a lot of crossover already. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, what if anything can the MCU do to steady the ship after the divisive reaction to Phase 4? I mean, this before, but I think we've both dropped off considerably.
Yeah, I feel like this entire phase just passed us by. Like, there was nothing really stand out, and I think that the big problem is that you didn't introduce an overarching villain. And I argue that maybe you can't do something like that straight away. If you were to basically just say, "Oh, Thanos is out of the picture. Here's the new big bad of arc," then you're kind of cheapening the impact that he had, because he won't feel as unique. So I get that you've got to do these individual stories. My biggest problem is that every single MCU film is starting to feel the same. Because of the Joss Whedon approach, because of the Taika Waititi approach, we are getting more comedy films with sci-fi and action elements on top of them, rather than being gritty superhero films that had mild comedic elements here and there. We're approaching a point where it couldn't be any further from how the DC started, where Marvel is now. It is so lighthearted, so family friendly, arguably so cash hungry that they're trying to market everything as being a slogan, a joke, a t-shirt. Like it's turned itself into hyper capitalism, the movie. And I feel like there's nothing bigger of a turnoff to me when I see $150 million spent on visual effects with zero time spent on the plot.
Like, that's perfectly put. I remember when you were up here last week, you were saying like it feels like every other character is quippy. It's like everything goes in that direction. I mean, Saints Row's out next week, and it's like the whole direction of that is very quip happy, which like Saints has been in the past, but I feel like there is this through line of like that Forspoken trailer. It's like you take that, that's the zenith of the worst of it. That's the most stripped back, you know, maximum reach, writing slogans and quips that'll work for a huge audience, but there's no memorability. Like the only thing that's memorable is how terrible it is.
And the funny thing is that people were giving that such a hard time. And I tell you this for none, that video, the Forspoken trailer that's doing the rounds at the moment, that could have easily been a Marvel trailer. That would have been exactly the same energy, like big bang of corporate greed. I'm just like it's Steve Buscemi, hello, fellow kids. And if you're listening to this and you disagree with me and Scott about this, the way that the MCU is headed, that's completely fine. You are allowed to have your own movie takes. I'm sure that there are some people out there who probably think that like that Doctor Strange, the Multitude of Madness, probably their favorite film. I don't know. There could be. But at the end of the day, it's just doesn't feel like there's any direction to it. Where are we headed? And unfortunately, by opening the multiverse theory door, it means that the consequences and impact of losing characters, of introducing new ones, actually feels pretty moot. We're now just saying like, hey, look, Captain Marvel's dead in this one. Who cares? Well, who cares?
In Loki, when they like broke it all out and it was like, okay, you're like the main timeline or whatever it's called. And there's like, there's a whole other one, but you're the most important one. But there are also infinite other additional ones. And that became the animated shows that they did and stuff. Like for me, that removed all stakes from everything because in a capitalistic sense or a business sense, it just means it can go on forever. Like we can just do another 20 Captain Americas or 20 Iron Men and just sort of bring anybody in to be that character.
You know, the amount of people that have said that they're not reprising the role. Like obviously Scarlett Johansson is obviously like she's Black Widow is dead, but now the multiverse theory is here. It means that she can come back for a cameo and people will be like, oh, that's the post-credits thing. Like, it's like, dude, like there's no such thing as impact through death anymore. We're done. No. We're done with that now.
Which is like, everyone remembers that the Tony Stark's death in Endgame, like obviously spoilers for that movie, but it's like 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Like, but that is almost immediately nullified if Robert Downey Jr. comes back in and to do like one more live action scene or whatever it is. But in terms of fixing it, rest the IP, I would say. I would just say make people want Marvel movies again. It's been so constant where we've had like two or three movies a year for the last like 10 years. And there's been like fluctuations in that regard, but I would rest the IP. I don't think anyone's looking forward to Phase 5 other than the most hardcore. So I would rest for a bit.
We're approaching a point of mass saturation where we're just losing, it's diminishing returns each and every time. My solution to potentially fix it, I'm not saying that this could work, but at least give it a try, is we scale back on all the movie aspects of it. And instead we have 5 or 6 TV shows that run on Disney Plus that basically tell the individual stories of superheroes and villains that will then meet a crossover thing and become like that version of the new Avengers. So you've got your six individual people, they all tell their stories, they all have fun there, and then they meet in a film and that's it.
That's kind of what they're doing at the minute, but they still do have the movie stuff.
And that's the thing, they always have the other movies as well that are trying to tell this other story. And it's like, no. Literally just scale it all the way back and just lead up to one event. And that event is the movie itself.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things is like, it's weird because the way that they sort of like trained audiences was like, keep up with all the movies and there's this big overarching story and it's Thanos at the end of it and we're getting there and we're getting there as a populace. And we're all just sort of, okay, check the next movie out because even if the movie's bad, you'll get bits and pieces about the overarching story. Yeah. Whereas once we went past Thanos, it's been like, okay, 5 or 6 TV shows, try and keep up with them. We've also got the movies, try and keep up with them. There's no real overarching thing. There's kind of like teasers of it, like time travel, multiversal travel and like just all the stuff they did in Loki. But then nothing really, no real overarching drive, even though that's what we were told to do beforehand. So I think they've had a weird sort of adaption or period as they've sort of come across into the TV realm. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would just rest stuff. There's way too much of Marvel stuff at the minute. Mark Smith asks, what games, if any, have you been defeated by and know you simply will never finish? I'm currently on my umpteenth attempt at finishing Darkest Dungeon, and once again, my fortunes are turning to ash. Bless you, mate. I can massively sympathize with that. I couldn't beat Darkest Dungeon to save my life.
Me neither. I found it so incredibly difficult because of the RNG elements that are in it, that you're just there like, oh, I've got a perfect party, and now they're mad and killing each other in Fantastic. Okay, cool, bye.
I don't know if you played much of Crypt of the Necrodancer as well, but I always like
my timing is so bad in that game, man.
Honestly, barely got out the tutorial. My brain would not attack on beat. I was like, I want to attack now, or like it feels like something's gonna hit me, so I want to dodge now. And it's just like, no, you're not on time, so I missed it. Because that was what put me up. I know you played loads of BPM, which I didn't play BPM, but I have played the Metal Hellsinger game that's coming up.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I got used to that, and I was like, okay, I can shoot on beat. Like, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
But in terms of a dungeon crawler with a grid, I could not control Crypt of the Necrodancer to save my
life. Because it was reading enemy movements as well as your own, where it was like, in the 3D space, you can always just run and jump, and you have free movement between. But as soon as you're trying to move, even if you're like, oh, God, they're not going to get me, trying to hammer the move button away, it's like, no, sorry, you're not moving on the beat or the half beat. No,
dodge, then come back, and then dodge again, then hit again. I really want to play that, the Zelda one, the Hyrule...
Cadence of Hyrule,
and I was like, that looked so gorgeous. I just ended up listening to the soundtrack on Spotify. I was like, I just cannot control those games to save my life. How about you in terms of being defeated?
Being defeated by a game, I usually pick my games quite carefully, and I will know within the first sort of hour or two if it's something that I feel will beat me. There was a few times where I felt like going through the Dark Souls games, the Sekiro games, that I felt like, oh, I will never get past this. Yep. This is impossible or absolutely unfair. Especially with Dark Souls 2. I managed to get through Dark Souls 1 without too much fuss. Dark Souls 3, again, was fairly smooth. Mm-hmm. Sekiro, I did find probably the easiest journey out of all of the From Software games, just because I clicked with it almost immediately. But man,
you
Dark Souls 2.
On Sekiro.
Dark Souls 2 just does my nut in. There's people out there that are like, it's the best Dark Souls game. And I'm like, mate... I usually tell people that they can have their own opinions on stuff, but you're wrong. You're wrong on this one.
So have you got through, because Dark Souls 2 is tedious as hell anyway, the amount of reused bosses and everything.
The thing is that it's just repeated environments. It makes no sense logistically in terms of at least with Dark Souls 1, it had a flow of the map. You could almost see areas that you were going to approach. I hated the PvP joining system. I hated just some of the mechanics. I hated the dodging, the iframes. I hated the fact that enemies can nearly 360 degree track your movements when they start an attack versus where they finish. And there's a few elements I do like the life gem crushing like that, and having the slow heat health regen to make you feel careful. But man, the majority of that game I was just fuming, and then when I killed a boss it was like, great, I've got another one to look forward to.
I remember
weapon degradation can just go in that game.
Yes.
What the hell was that about?
Weapon degradation has never been used well.
Was never used in the franchise again, which shows you that they clearly didn't enjoy it themselves.
I remember at the start of that game, you can completely miss the woman who gives you the Estus flask. So I went right past her, and I went into the whole cathedral bit, and I was fighting the other, the repeat version of Ornstein. And I was just like, the Dragon Rider. I was like, there's got to be a way to heal. I've got half a health bar, because once you die, it's your health bar's capped anyway.
Yeah.
I couldn't heal. And I was like, okay, I'm just stuck in this area. And so my initial impression of Dark Souls 2 was rancid, because I was like, I just can't even get any health back. But yeah, I'm going to go with Crypt of the Necrodancer. Yours can be Dark Souls 2.
I'll amend mine to say that it's a Dark Souls 2 Scholar of the First Sin, because I did actually manage to complete Dark Souls 2 in the end, but I have not managed to complete Scholar of the First Sin.
Okay. I think Scholar's meant to be the one that's fixed everything, quote unquote.
It fixes everything in the sense that it does change a lot, which does help with the gameplay flow, but unfortunately it adds in a ton of new enemies that makes it even more challenging. So I found sections that I was already struggling with so impossible.
Okay, next question from KTM421, who says hello. He says happy Thursday.
Thursday, mate.
I know. A few more days to go. After finishing Stranger Things and finding a new love for heavy metal and Metallica, my question is, what game, film, or TV show has made you find love for a band/artist and why?
Oh, that's a really nice thing, because it's all about sharing the appreciation of music. So glad that you've gotten back onto the heavy metal train, my friend. For me, it was Scott Pilgrim, The World, the video game versus The World, the video, because of Anna Managuchi. Getting back into chiptune and sort of very, very aggressive sort of EDM music, I guess we would call it. But I enjoyed that game a lot, and the music as a result as well. Sorry, the reason I paused midway through my sentence is because Scott's been thrown into perpetual darkness. I'm watching on his screen. He's filming in the upstairs bit of the game room. For some reason, the lights have gone off, and now it just looks like he's in some sort of very lo-fi horror film.
I'm trying to wave my arms without getting up. I just thought I'd pick a room in the office that I can set a microphone up in, and it sounds all right, I think. But it's pitch black now, and so I'm trying to like move my arms to get the tracking thing for the light. Doesn't work. Anyway, doesn't matter. My thing I was going to say was the Blade Runner. I was already into synthwave because of Hotline Miami, but there's a whole other like wing of synth music that is more like the Vangelis stuff that, from the original Blade Runner. And I really love that stuff. Like the new game, Citizen Sleeper soundtrack is kind of like that. Just lots of really disparate, sort of distant jazz, brass instruments in amongst like rainfall and the sounds of like different ships going by overhead and cars and lots of ambient stuff. So I think it's like ambient synthwave that I just love putting on in the background, where it's not necessarily about a beat. It's about like a mentality or a mood. Last question from Willie Araya, who says, is there an indie you've played this year that you'd like more people to try? I've been playing Dungeons of Dreadrock on Switch, and it's a classic 2D puzzle game with lots of charm.
Ooh, that sounds awesome. See, the thing is that I haven't actually played anything new indie game wise this year, apart from Turbo Golf, game that's like Rocket League but with golf. I think it's done by Secret Mode. They have basically just churned out this game that is so unbelievably polished. It plays so well. The multiplayer on it is fantastic. That it feels like a AAA game just that has just dropped. It's amazing.
It's very
amazing.
Like Rocket League, yeah.
And I've been having a great time with it as well. Like we had some people on the Live and Let's Die stream last week or the week before, and we all played it together, and it was just so much fun.
Nice. I like the idea of just Rocket League with golf. Like, because that game's on Game Pass at the minute. I played a little bit of that. I think my most recommended indie thing is probably Ollie World. That was the thing.
Oh, you loved that game.
So lost in. Rollerdrome's out this afternoon at like 2 o'clock, which is the same devs. They're able to drop two games in the same year.
Rollerdrome. What's that?
Rollerdrome.
That's the elimination
shotgun.
Game.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
I cannot wait. That game goes live at 2 o'clock. I can't wait for that. So hopefully that thing plays as well as it looks, because that game is hopefully just Tony Hawk's Pro Skater with Uzis and shotguns and a score multiplier.
Amazing.
And apparently like a dark story that you figure out level by level or something. It's about like a weird alternate reality TV show, and you're finding out what's going on behind the scenes. I've read very little about it. I just know that there's a bit more to it than just the gameplay. But yeah, hopefully that looks good, or hopefully that plays good. Ollie World is the thing that I just lived on alongside Elden Ring and most of this year. It doubles up in terms of getting me into music. Like, there's a whole chill hop synthy soundtrack to that, that is just gorgeous. But if you like arcade skateboarding games, Ollie World, I thought, just was the perfect evolution of what they tried with the first two. So definitely
fantastic.
So yes, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions, talking points, and whatever. We'll put this out on Friday. We're recording it on Tuesday. Next week, though, we'll do in-person stuff. We can do Untitled Banter Pod in person. Yes. We can do a main podcast in person.
Fingers crossed. Josh for the in-person as well for the, because we promised the people that we'd all get together.
We've still got a bunch of questions left over from last time, so we're going to do them. If we can all get in the same room together for the first time in 2 years, cross all the fingers, pray to you.
What a dream that would be. A dream, I'd say.
It will be. We'll make it work. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Jules Gill.
Thank you very much for having me. And remember, you can put your questions live for us next week whenever we get to film it in person. Just check your Twitter on a Thursday at RetroJ with the 0 for me and at /LP89 for Scott to find out when we ask for questions.
Beautiful. We'll catch you next week.
3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.